Pop Town.
Zapatistas warnen, dass das Gebiet Chiapas in Mexiko an der Schwelle zum Bürgerkrieg sei. Vielleicht ganz kurz die Zapatistas, worum geht's da? 1994 gab es eine Art kleine Revolution, könnte man es nennen. Indigene und einfach politisch organisierte Gruppierungen haben in Südmexiko Gebiete, die auch einfach traditionell ihnen gehören, besetzt, okkupiert, ihre eigenen Gemeinden selbst organisiert, eine autonome Region geschaffen innerhalb des mexikanischen Staats, wo sie mit einer neuen eigenen basisdemokratischen Regierung sich selbst organisiert haben und das sehr erfolgreich. Bis heute gibt es diese Gemeinden und aktuell ist allerdings die Lage auch wieder ein bisschen angespannter und deswegen gibt es morgen eine Demonstration, die unter anderem die Reaktion darauf ist, dass einer der Compañeros der Zapatistas in diesem Gebiet Chiapas am 22. Mai getroffen wurde von einer Schusswaffe bei einem Angriff auf die Zapatista-Bewegung. Das ist aber nur ein Fall von mehreren. Und über diesen Kontext, warum heute demonstriert werden soll, spreche ich jetzt mit Letizia Hildenbrand. Und ich habe jetzt schon gesagt, die Demonstration ist für heute angesetzt in Mexico City. Jetzt ist die Hauptstadt von Mexiko relativ weit weg von dem Süden Mexikos, wo die Zapatistas ihre Gemeinden haben. Trotzdem wird dahin mobilisiert. Mit welchem konkreten Aufruf eigentlich? Was ist die Zielsetzung dieser Demonstration?
Also, am 22. Juni. places, workplace, let it go, steady down, what's wrong?
Explain yourself. Body dead. Body count. Nothing makes it stay. Fuck about trip. This is a remix of a friend
Internet.
He did for me, which is gonna come out in a few months.
Internet.
Fuck the atmosphere!
out on strange therapy. Thanks to Walter, who's standing right over there. This one's for you, buddy. Thank you. I'm Donna Haringway. Thanks so much for inviting me. This is the last song. This song is about tech bros and money. Thanks so much. Thanks to Suba for inviting me, and thanks to you guys. I'm tired now.
On the high-rise estate, what's at the back of your mind? On a three-day debate, on a high-rise estate, what's at the back of your mind? Two icy cold hands conducting the way
It's the Eskimo blood in my veins. Amid concrete and clay and general decay, nature must still find a way. So ignore all the codes of the day, let your juvenile impulses sway. This way and this way and this way and that way. God, how sex implores you to let yourself lose yourself. Stretch out and wait, stretch out and wait. Let your beauty body lie down, lie down. As will I say, stretch out and stretch out and wait, stretch out and wait. Let your beauty body lie down, as will I say. Will the world end in the night time? I really don't know. Or will the world end in the daytime? I really don't. And is there any point ever having children? No, I don't know. What I do know is we're here and it's now. So stretch out and away, stretch out and away. There is no debate, no debate, no debate. How can you consciously contemplate when there's no debate, no debate? Stretch out and away. Stretch out and wait, stretch out and wait, wait, wait.
Thank you. Feel like it's inside your head? I'm Anand Jagatia and this is Crowd Science from the BBC World Service, and today we're exploring the pictures that most of us see in our heads all the time. Memories from the past that play out like movies, visions of places you've been, the faces of people you know, or even just picturing what you fancy for dinner later. But not everyone can form these sorts of mental images. Like Crowd Science listener Eileen from Scotland.
I've come in my life to realise that people can actually visualise and see pictures in their head, and I didn't realise this was a real true thing, and now it frustrates me. Why can I not see pictures in my head when friends and family all can? I know I have the capacity because when I'm asleep, I do dream in motion and in picture and in colour. But as soon as I wake up, I lose the pictures and have no mental recall of them. So that's really my question. Why can't I see pictures in my head when others can?
So this is absolutely fascinating, Eileen. I mean, people talk about having a mind's eye or being able to picture something, having mental images, and that's just something that you don't have.
I have the ability in my dreams, but when I'm awake, and I really just thought that mind's eye was a figure of speech for a long time in my life. And it took a conversation with my friend who was giving me perfect recall of an event that had happened over a year ago, down to what people were wearing and who sat next to who, for me to think, actually, how can she possibly know that if she can't see a picture? And that's when I discovered she was seeing a full colour, in detail picture in her head. It's never held me back. You know, I've got my education, I hold down a good job, I do remember things, just maybe not in the same way that other people remember things.
And if I asked you to sort of imagine your front door or the front of your house, something that you probably see every day, what happens? Just nothing?
I don't see a picture. I kind of know that my front door is brown and that it's wooden and that it has a glass panel in the middle of it. But if you asked me, I know it's a kind of stained glass panel, but if you asked me what the pattern on it was, I couldn't tell you that. I have to think, where is the handle? I have to think, where would I put the key in? And kind of physically imagine doing that in my head to know where the handle is.
So what would you actually like us to find out then, Eileen?
First of all, I want to know if anybody knows or can explain why I can't do it. And also, a wee supplementary, I would actually really like to have the pictures in my brain. I think it sounds fun and I think it might just help my memory. So is there anything I can do to improve the situation and maybe start getting pictures?
Well, we'll definitely look into it. Thank you so much for getting in touch, Eileen. And yeah, we'll let you know what we find out. What I find really striking about this is that Eileen only discovered she experienced the world differently to the people around her when she was an adult. I guess it shows that we often take our own way of perceiving reality for granted, as normal. Now, Eileen has never spoken to a doctor about this, but as she said, it's not something that's ever held her back in life. But for the rest of us, what are mental images actually for? Why do we have the ability to create a virtual reality in the theatre of our minds?
We have mental images for all sorts of reasons.
Emily Holmes is a clinical psychologist who researches mental images.
One thing they can do is help us travel in time. So they can help us go back and visit something in our past, like a memory, and get information from that. And they can also help us go forwards and, as it were, play out different scenarios and what might happen. And it might be something very ordinary, like how to navigate between where you are now in your studio to where you're going to go and have lunch. But you could, for example, choose to decide the best route by playing it out in your mind's eye and then choosing the route that you wish to go. So that's one reason, sort of going back in the past, going back to the future. And I guess it's about really about being able to simulate the world and weigh up different possibilities. It's not the only way to do that. We can also do it verbally, but imagery gives us one way to do that.
So mental images are a way of simulating the world. Our mind's eye can serve different purposes, but the images it creates are often emotional. We asked some of the crowd science team to tell us about visualizations that were meaningful to them.
My name's Hannah, and my most visual memory is actually of my grandparents' house. As you walk in the front door, I can picture it in my head. I can literally see there's a wardrobe on the right. I'm looking straight through, right to the window of the breakfast room, right into the garden. And the hall is big, it's open, and on the left is this wicker chair with a very sad looking cushion on it, and that is their telephone chair. When you're sitting in that chair, you're looking right up at the stairs, these very, very old, you know, white wooden banister fraying carpet going up them. And as you go through the hallway, you'd have on your right the living room door with a really old thick wooden door with a really high handle, and it was painted a light grey, and that would open into the dining room. I don't know why I can visualise the house so well, but I'm really glad I can, because it's a place that holds so many special memories and lots of family thoughts.
Most of us have the same ability as Hannah to take ourselves to other places in our heads. Sometimes these mental trips can feel incredibly vivid, and if we do it intentionally, it can be a powerful way of changing our emotional state. So why can't listener Eileen do this? And is it possible to answer her question about what causes it?
The realisation that maybe 3% of the world's population lacks the ability to visualise, and they lack it throughout their lives, that realisation is a relatively recent one.
This is neurologist Adam Zeman. Up until 2015, there wasn't a word for this phenomenon until Adam coined a term for it, aphantasia, the absence of a mind's eye. Since then, he's been in contact with 17,000 people who report a lack of mental imagery.
We know relatively little about why that is the case. We know that it seems to run in families. So if you are aphantasic, then your first degree relatives have a roughly tenfold increase in the likelihood of being aphantasic. So there may be some genetic influences